Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 14th day of September, 2019. I'm your host, Mark Call. And let's begin our wrap-up of a week with a whole lot of good news and bad news with a quick review of some of the let's-get-it-out-of-the-way news. The kind of stuff that could fit in either of those categories, or both. Like John Bolton, former National Security Advisor, and how's that for a joke of a title? Was he fired, or did he quit? Well, either way, good riddance. The Trump tweet surrounding the debacle is at least eye-opening. I informed John Bolton last night, wrote the president, that his services are no longer needed at the White House. I disagreed strongly with many of his suggestions, as did others in the administration, and therefore I asked John for his resignation, which was given to me this morning. That would have been Tuesday. And he continued, I thank John very much for his service. I will be naming a new National Security Advisor next week. And as you might suspect, by Friday, names were starting to appear on various lists. The good news is, or so we're now told, he probably won't pick Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. The bad news is, as Dr. Ron Paul pointed out and given the track record, will another John Bolton end up replacing this John Bolton? And there was all kinds of news this week out of the corrupt and increasingly obviously corrupt FBI. The bad news, of course, the sheer volume, depth, breadth, and width of the corruption. The good news, at least finally, a bit more of it is seeping out. Chronologically, at least as we try to recap it, if we have some time, we'll go into more detail in a bit. The FBI never searched the pervert Anthony Weiner's laptop until after the 2016 election. Gee, who could have imagined such a thing? And they seem to have managed to, lose a whole lot of evidence besides. Maybe no surprise there. Another long-withheld memo has finally, at least been acknowledged to exist, hasn't yet actually surfaced, but it is being called a bombshell, and it exonerates Michael Flynn. A lot of now embarrassing exculpatory evidence exposed during his recent hearing. And from the other side of the coup, I guess you'd call this at least a bit of good news, even if it's way late, unindicted criminals that may actually someday end up getting indicted. And that story from Thursday night, I'll introduce this way. All bets down, please. And we have a winner, Andrew McCabe. You are the designated scapegoat. And yes, it's true. A lot of folks thought none of them would ever come. The Just Us Department decided that evidently somebody isn't part of Just Us anymore, and on Thursday they notified attorneys for former FBI Deputy Hormeister Director Andrew McCabe that his appeal to avoid criminal prosecution has finally been rejected, according to Bloomberg, citing a source close to McCabe's legal team. Among other things, as you may recall, unless you listen to CNN, he lied over and over and over and over again to the Inspector General about various aspects of the coup. And that's probably just the tip of the iceberg. There were the usual leaks and cover-ups, too. And in his defense, this is at least humorous, McCabe said that his boss, the Chief Hormeister, former FBI Director James Comey, and liar extraordinaire, knew about and authorized his leak, too. And that may be as close to the truth as anything we're likely to hear from any of these scumbags, suggests your, downright disgusted and cynical host. Here's one more, somehow or other, I'll suggest it's related. This comes from the Gateway Pundit. Joe Hoff labeled it an exclusive. And it says that despite testimony, as if that mattered, that Hillary Clinton had stopped using the personal email server that she illegally set up during her years as Secretary of State under the Obama regime, new evidence now shows that it was in use, continuing in use, until the day before it was finally wiped clean, long after they said she was done with it, via BleachBit. Recent emails released through Judicial Watch show that the Clinton confidant and attorney, Heather Samuelson, stated that Hillary Clinton had stopped using that ClintonEmail.com address set up for her illegal use when she was no longer Secretary of State as of February 2013. And she said in order to make a clean break from the past, or perhaps try to hide it, they started using HRCOffice.com instead, and that none, trust us, none of the old emails from Clinton's Secretary of State days were transferred to the new account. But guess what, folks? Yeah. They lied! Again! Who'd have thought it? From there, the flow of news this week is such that one way or the other, we're going to have to talk about Whoppers. Whoppers that have lasted either for, well, days at this point, or in fact, years, even decades. And since, when I put it that way, you already know where one of those things is headed, let's do that first. Wednesday, September 11th this week was, of course, the 18th anniversary of one of the most infamous false flags and outright incredible cover-ups in all of U.S., if not world history, so far. What we've had since, I guess you could say, concentrates more on quantity rather than quality. But we've sure had lots of them, especially when it comes to trying to disarm you for whatever comes next. Well, in any case, folks, just about everybody knows this is the date which is simply called 9/11. Quick aside here. Yeah, it really infuriates me that there were some politicians who said, we need to call it Patriots Day, because we don't want to talk about the old Patriots Day, you know, the one where the shot heard round the world was fired at Lexington and Concord Green that led to American independence. No, no, that was the old Patriots Day. Now we've got a better one, when we can celebrate the destruction of all that they once fought for. And maybe now it's clear why that name really bothers me. Old Patriots Day was about liberty. But now, when so-called patriots talk about things like the Patriot Act, you already know it's about tyranny instead. So I wanted to do something at least a bit different than celebrating the tyranny that the main propaganda agencies are pushing this week to commemorate the loss of liberty that so many people, both then and since, are being sacrificed to bring about. And since most regular listeners probably already know what I'm talking about, while those that are still drinking the Kool-Aid probably aren't interested in seeing the truth anyway, even if it's been staring them right in the face for about 18 years at this point, I'm not going to pull any punches today or assume that if you're still listening at this point, you're not at least familiar with some of the big whoppers surrounding the big lie. And we certainly don't have time, even in an hour show, to deal with all of the big science-defying whoppers that have been foisted on a gullible and dumbed-down public. What I am going to do is recap a bit of what's new of late, at least relatively, and then take a look back at a number of stories that have been done over the last few years on or about this particular anniversary date. So I'll start with a look, of course, at the latest report on the demise of World Trade Center Building 7, which for sure wasn't hit by any airplanes, and as we now know, was pulled. It came from a long period of research, just how long we'll talk about later, via the University of Alaska Fairbanks, in which an international team of civil engineers concluded again that the official story of the destruction of at least Building 7 is entirely false. And as Dr. Paul Craig Roberts put it, so far as the waste stream is concerned, and he asked readers for any feedback to the contrary, the expert report's probably already been stuffed down the memory hole. Because it's kind of tough to keep labeling a distinguished team of experts conspiracy theorists. So better just to ignore that the report even exists, because there's no argument anymore that Building 7 was a controlled demolition. And we'll touch on aspects of that again throughout the show. Which brings me next to a set of stories that I recorded on this anniversary a year ago today, in 2018, where I started out this way. It is, of course, the 17th anniversary of the biggest terror attack, and more importantly, false flag, and that's in reverse order, in at least the history of the now formerly free United States. And conspiracies and cover-ups like this have had literally everything to do with it. Most of you by now who aren't drinking the WAPO, New York Times, Robert Mueller, and FBI Kool-Aid know that there are literally thousands of architects, engineers for 911 Truth, and others who pointed out literally dozens of impossibilities that the American people have been expected to swallow by those purveyors of falsehood. From the amazing and, of course, unbelievable fact that the only piece of evidence at all that survived the alleged impacts of those planes with the World Trade Center towers were the passports of all of the bad guys, which floated down amidst the rubble, while all the other evidence that wasn't hauled away by Big Brother's minions was incinerated. And that includes the steel-reinforced concrete structure that made up the interior of those three buildings, including, of course, World Trade Center 7, that wasn't actually hit by anything, presuming, of course, that the other two actually were. And that's a pretty big assumption, given that there weren't any wingtip vortices associated with any kind of an actual airplane, as physics would suggest, in any of the videotapes, whether they were doctored otherwise or not. And who can forget, of course, that the buildings accomplished the incredible, meaning absolutely not believable feat of not only collapsing into their own footprint, what are the odds of that, especially if they were hit from the side and that caused the problem, but they dropped at free fall acceleration, almost like every other building taken out by demolition charges. So let's start a quick look back at this massive act of conspiracy and cover-up with one of the most obvious of the glaring inconsistencies, the mysterious collapse of WTC-7. In this case, via a summary from David Ray Griffin at Global Research. Because almost 7 hours after the first two of the Twin Towers had come down, Building 7 was also pulled. At least that's what the recordings called it. And no doubt about it, this collapse didn't have anything to do with being hit by an airplane. And so it became, for sure, the first steel-framed high-rise building in the entire known universe to have allegedly collapsed because of fire alone. And even New York Times reporter James Glanz at the time seemed to have an issue with that, quoting a structural engineer saying, "Within the structural engineering community, WTC-7 is considered to be a much more important question to understand than the Twin Towers because, quote, engineers had no answer to the question, why did 7 come down?" Not that most Americans hadn't probably seen something very similar on television many times before that. It's called controlled demolition. So, from a purely scientific perspective, notes the Global Research piece, the obvious initial assumption to make, the scientific hypothesis, would be that WTC-7 came down just like all the other buildings we've seen that looked the same, because explosives had been used to remove its structural steel supports. However, the public discussion of the destruction of the World Trade Center didn't occur in a scientific context, but in a highly charged political theater. America had, or so we've been told, just been attacked by foreign terrorists who'd flown hijacked planes into the Twin Towers, and in response, the Bush regime had launched a war on terror. So the idea that even one of the buildings had been brought down by explosives would have implied that the attacks, hadn't been a surprise. As indeed so much of the other evidence, now ignored, also tends to suggest. So anyway, this idea couldn't be entertained by many minds in private, let alone in public. Which meant that people needed to be made to believe that Building 7 had been brought down by fire. Although, as Glanz wrote, experts said no building like it in a modern steel-reinforced high-rise had ever collapsed because of uncontrolled fire, especially since the temperatures involved were way too low to weaken, much less melt steel. And that meant this building's collapse must be a mystery, that is, if it was even considered at all. But as it was, the mystery was seldom even discussed, or for that matter, admitted by most of the waste stream. Your host has certainly heard people called conspiracy theorists for even knowing that there was a third World Trade Center building, WTC-7, that actually collapsed. Be an interesting poll, wouldn't it? Ask people on the street in New York how many buildings actually collapsed on 9/11 17 years ago. I bet you the big answer would be 2. Polls like that, by the way, have been conducted nationwide, and no more than a fraction of Americans, maybe 1 in 6, seem to have any idea that Building 7 actually existed. And here's where the plot thickens in our brief summary. The mysteriousness of that collapse wasn't lessened by the first official report about it, issued by FEMA in 2002, which put forward what's now called its best hypothesis about why the building collapsed, but then added that it had, quote, only a low probability of occurrence, meaning small, if not outright zero. And the FEMA report actually increased the mystery thanks to an appendix written by 3 professors at Worcester Polytechnic Institute, which reported on a piece of steel from WTC-7 that had melted so severely it had gaping holes in it, making it look like a piece of Swiss cheese. Which caused James Glanz to point out, noting that the fires couldn't have been hot enough to melt steel, that this was the deepest mystery uncovered in the, investigation. Sick. But it got worse. There was a follow-up whitewash, that's your host term, via a report from NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which was supposed to come out in 2005, but didn't, because I guess it takes a really long time to produce this much scientific fraud. It finally came out in August 2008 and contained a complete denial of any evidence for actual explosives. Suffice it to say, most architects and engineers concerned with 9-1-1 truth simply referred to NIST and scientific fraud in the same sentence. One whistleblower, a former employee and scientist who worked for NIST, has said that that bureaucracy had been, quote, fully hijacked from the scientific into the political realm, unquote, with the result that scientists, sick, working for NIST not only lost their scientific independence, but became little more than hired guns. Referring in specific to NIST work on the World Trade Center, the man said everything had to be approved by the Department of Commerce, the National Security Agency, imagine that, and the Office of Management and Budget, an arm of the Executive Office of the President, which, quote, had a policy person specifically delegated to provide oversight on NIST's work, unquote. And here, folks, in the interest of brevity, your host is going to skip over page after page after page of scientific evidence in addition to that piece of steel that was ignored by NIST, not to mention most of the fake news media. I will, however, wrap up this part of the story with one brief anecdote. A reporter asked Michael Newman, NIST spokesperson, about this failure to look for explosives like nanothermite, asking, "What about that letter where NIST said it didn't look for evidence of explosives?" Whereupon Newman replied, "Right, because there was no evidence of that." "But," asked the intrepid reporter, "how can you know there's no evidence if you don't look for it?" Replied Newman, "If you're looking for something that isn't there, you're wasting your time and the taxpayers' money," unquote. Because there's a story to tell here, folks, and it doesn't seem like the truth has anything to do with it. Even after 18 years. Some of this year's really classic whoppers, though, actually emerged, as you might expect, on the anniversary day itself. Not to be overlooked was the New York Times, basically, let's call it a celebration of the totalitarian police state they've helped put in place ever since. There's been a whole lot written about their perfidy, but I like this headline. New York Times says, "Some airplanes hit some buildings." DC Dirty Laundry called it disgraceful, saying the New York Times published a Muslim op-ed about how the world took 9/11 from us, saying that basically they continued to push their new leftist hug a Muslim terrorist agenda. They link to the whole stinking bit of tripe and then ask, "Takiya anyone?" Suggesting the Gray Lady's agenda was, quote, "political and it is disgusting." Says the Gateway Pundit, same subject, "On the anniversary of the event that killed about 3,000 people, wounded more than 6,000 others, and was attributed to Islamic terrorists, but they obviously had some help from some highly placed people in the deep state who managed to not only look the other way, right, Robert Mueller et al., but covered up the truth for at least a decade and a half so far." But it's the New York Times that actually came out and said the following, quote, "18 years have passed since airplanes took aim at the World Trade Center and brought them down," unquote. Yeah, just like guns kill people, so do airplanes, and I guess we need to get rid of them too. These pagans believe that pilotless guns manage to kill people. They evidently just rise up and deal death. So why not imply pilotless airplanes target people as well? It's no less insipid. Once they were called out, the criminals at the Times later changed the passage to read, "18 years have passed since terrorists commandeered airplanes to take aim at the World Trade Center and bring them down." Of course, still no mention of, what, if any, religious affiliation those terrorists might have had. Thankfully, the only thing that survived, not the engines, not the planes, not truth for crying out loud, were their passports. How amazing. But let's be honest here, dumbed-down Americans 18 years after the fact are getting pretty used to having to believe six impossible things before breakfast. All right, and how's that for a segue to the progressive socialist leftist Bolshevik communists that still try to call themselves Democrats? And there's so many of them that want to be your next dictator and have the privilege of taking away not only your guns, but all of what you still thought was your private property. Now here, folks, your host has to admit, no, I did not subject myself to sitting through that abomination called a debate. I'd rather watch old tapes of Joe Stalin if I want to see a real tyrant who knows how to kill people. These guys are still studying his moves. And if you want to see female communists, you might as well watch Evita. At least they're singing there. And honestly, I did see some of the recap of the so-called best one-liners, and the only thing that stood out to me in the whole list was Bernie Sanders calling Trump the, quote, "most dangerous president in the history of our country." And I'm thinking, hey, every single person on the stage wants to one-up that, no doubt about it. So at least for now, I'll go with this highlight surrounding the debates. This came from Tyler Durden and Zero Hedge about spiritual guru and long shot Democrat candidate Marianne Williamson, who is clearly a nutcase, but at least she's a more likable nutcase than those who just plain want to take your gun so they can take the rest of your stuff and then maybe kill you later. The headline says that in a hot mic moment, she actually admitted that conservatives are nicer than those other people she was on the stage with. Williamson first noted her observations in an interview, says Tyler Durden, with The New Yorker's David Remnick, published September 3rd, in which she said, quote, "I know, this sounds naive. I didn't think the left was so mean. I didn't think the left lied like this," adding, "I thought the right did that. I thought we were better." She went on to slam Democrats for being condescending to people of faith. You may remember the big stink about how some of them were just plain so disgusted that there were still Americans who prayed for things like protection from hurricanes. She was slammed by the oh-so-tolerant for actually defending such. And then she followed all of that up with a hot mic moment where she said, quote, "What does it say that Fox News is nicer to me than the lefties are? What does it say that the conservatives are nicer to me? It's such a bizarre world," she said, adding, "You know, I'm such a lefty. I mean, I'm a serious lefty, but they're so... I didn't think the left was as mean as the right. They are." Well, yeah. So she's figured it out. Probably, hopefully, other Americans are too. And maybe they'll get the clue before jackbooted thugs bust down their door at 4 a.m, like all their other leftist buddies have been doing throughout history. When it comes to meta news, of course, one of the biggest has to do with public-private partnerships, a.k.a. fascism. And as a new piece by Guns in the News puts it, you can call them Thought Control, Inc., when it comes to big corporations and, of course, gun control. The most recent gun control moves by China's favorite big-box retailer Walmart and Kroger are the continuation of a larger program by the left to impose gun control by hook or by crook through major corporations whose sway and sphere of control is almost comparable to that of monopolies, says author Daniel Greenfield, who discussed how the project began via big banks and big financial institutions. "It was in the spring of 18," he writes, "March for Our Lives had held its signature event in the Swamp Central of Washington, D.C., without making much of an impact. Blue states and cities had already suffered from rigid gun control, and they still do, of course, and in red states and cities..." By the way, the colors are backwards, folks, but that's part of the problem here. "Politicians on both sides of the alleged aisle had learned the hard way that the Bill of Rights still had some passionate supporters. But 2 days earlier, Citigroup, number 4 largest bank in the country, had announced that it was unilaterally imposing its own gun control regulations by requiring that, quote, small businesses, commercial and institutional clients, and credit card partners implement its favored restrictions on firearm sales. Next month, the second largest bank, Bank of America, SIC, fired its own shot at the Second Amendment by announcing that it too would refuse to underwrite securities for companies that manufacture what its vice chairman, appropriately, called military-style firearms. So even as the campaign to pressure elected officials to impose gun control was losing ground, the financial industry was subverting the political system. That's obviously part of the problem with a crooked money system. At the intersection of March for Our Lives, Citigroup, and Bank of America lay the hidden hand, writes Greenfield, of the 10th wealthiest man in America. He's referring, of course, to the infamous evil Michael Bloomberg and his multiple anti-constitutional gun control front groups. He spends a couple of paragraphs outlining the corporate puppet string connections, but it was outlined by puppet Andrew Ross Sorkin in a New York Times column, Where Else?, saying, quote, "What if the finance industry, credit card companies like Visa, MasterCard, and American Express, credit card processors like First Data, and banks like J.P. Morgan Chase and Wells Fargo were to effectively set new rules for the sales of guns in America? Yeah, Hitler, folks, would have loved it. It's right down the public partner fascist aisle. Collectively," he concluded, "they have more leverage over the gun industry than any lawmaker." Greenfield calls it Thought Control, Inc., and noted that earlier, BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager, had announced it was pressuring gun manufacturers to adopt its anti-gun policies, and in its press release, they boasted about what they'd done to Dick's Sporting Goods, and that Walmart and Kroger, hey, that sounds familiar, had already imposed age limits. The story continues, but I think it's important to wrap up this segment with a quote from Mayor Amschel Rothschild, who infamously said, "Give me control of a nation's money, and I care not who makes its laws." And on that note, we'll pick it up there after the bottom of the hour break. Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. This is still your host, Mark Hall. Here next, the story that I pretty much feel compelled to do today, simply because for at least a week or so, I have utterly avoided discussing those who intend to destroy the United States by any means necessary. But we were certainly working up to it in the first segment. And of course, I'm talking about the so-called Democrats, a.k.a. progressive, liberal, outright socialist, Bolshevik, communist, fascist running for president. And have you noticed all of those ideologies seem to have melded into one? Truthfully, if they just came out and called themselves the Animal Farm Party, they wouldn't have to argue so much about the details of Marxist-Leninist totalitarianism. In the last week alone, we've seen creepy Joe Biden, who's not only senile, but his high-profile bloodshot eye makes him look like about an 8-day drunk. He followed that up with tooth issues and more gaffes than stumbles. And thus emerged as probably the least scary, because he's simply too decrepit to do as much harm as the others, while Bolshevik Bernie openly talks about genocide against undesirables. If he was any less of a communist, he'd be called a white supremacist for saying a whole lot less. While St. Pete the Porniferous lectures Christians about how his God loves him more than them because he's more gay than they are, while his supporters cheer his satanic theology because they really hate the Bible anyway. And it may be the only thing less of them have read than the Constitution. Oh yeah, and then there was CNN's 7-hour town hall meeting, last week's Whopper Fest, which evidently nobody actually sat through all the way, probably even including the producers, while the participants one-upped each other, trying to promise who could destroy the U.S. economy the fastest, and proving that they know almost as little about actual science as Mayor Pete does about actual scripture. But that, of course, isn't going to stop any of them from running your lives anyway. Because the one thing they all seem to agree on is how much they absolutely detest the Constitution and rule of law. So with that in mind, I want to take a look at a piece that Mike Adams wrote over the weekend for Natural News under the headline, If Elected to the White House, Democrats Promise to Ban Combustion Engines, Meat Products, Transportation, Agriculture, and Plunge America into Famine and Pestilence. And as your host would summarize much of the rest of the piece, all the nutcases kind of blend together. Hi, I'm Beto Pocahontas Bolshevik Bernie Stalin, and I'm running to rule the world. If elected, or better still, if I'm gulagged into office, I promise to steal your neighbor's guns, destroy the world economy, further encourage the ongoing foreign invasion, nuke our own infrastructure, and, if you survive all of that, give you lots of free stuff. As Adams notes, if we put all these totalitarian socialists in charge of everything, no doubt they'll turn our entire nation into exactly what they've already done with San Francisco, Los Angeles, Chicago, Seattle, Portland, and most of the left coast. Without exception, they're all collapsing into cesspools of filth, disease, homelessness, substance abuse, violent crime, lawlessness, destitution, and outright insanity. He backs that up with a really great meme or poster showing the feces and needle-strewn streets of one of those typical rat-infested hell holes, with a caption reading something like, "And these are the people that claim they're going to clean up the environment?" Well, continues Adams, here are just a few of the things that the so-called Democrats, like Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, and Pete Buttigieg, promised to outlaw if they're ever allowed to infest the Oval Office. Number one, combustion engines. No more internal combustion engines will be allowed to operate anywhere in the United States, including those that power farm vehicles, airplanes, transportation trucks, public school buses, and personal automobiles, especially those. This is part of the socialist Green New Deal pushed by Alexandria, the occasional Cortex, the first clinically retarded imbecile to have ever been elected to the U.S. Congress. This insane scheme, he continues, of banning combustion engines, geriatric Joe Biden wants to go at least one step further and end all fossil fuels in the United States. But don't worry, none of you will freeze, even in the winter, because, you know, man-made global warming. But even what now passes for the mainstream of the far-left globalist plan would, of course, result in the immediate and total collapse of U.S. agriculture, transportation, free market logistics, tourism, and education, although that's pretty well already gone, leading to mass starvation, disease, and depopulation of the USA, which is the real goal. The fact that none of the candidates pushing this insane ban on internal combustion engines seems to have any clue as to what the result might be just underscores the delusional psychosis that now characterizes nearly all of the far left that once called themselves Democrats. They want to ban plastic straws, too. Yeah, that'll fix the world. And here I have my own comment. Ponder the irony of this, folks. Aspartame, glyphosate, mandatory vaccination. Yeah, gotta make sure you have your intravenous mercury. Supermarkets chock full of genetically modified frankenfoods. And now 5G won't hurt you. But be afraid, be very afraid of plastic straws. And do I even need to add? Yeah, make sure you don't step on the needles or in the piles of you-know-what on the streets either. Mike Adams' list then goes on to meat products, because now they're blaming cow farts for the problems of so-called man-made, of course, but they don't say that anymore, climate change. Democrats want to have the government tell you it's bad to eat meat. Well, unless now, and we're hearing more and more about this, it's cannibalism. Don't worry, you can eat your neighbors after somebody takes their guns. Note that all the human farts coming out of feces-infested cities like San Francisco, says Adams, never seem to enter the minds of these same lunatics who blame cows for the problems of the world. That, of course, and MAGA hat wearers. Liberal cities like Seattle, Portland, and Austin not only produce enormous quantities of human farts, but they also collect, concentrate, and export all their human waste in the form of biosludge that gets dumped on rural America to contaminate farms, rivers, and streams. So if liberals really wanted to make a fuss about feces and flatulence, suggests Adams, they should start by literally owning their own you-know-what first and stop dumping all of their feces, those that don't get left on these socialist city streets anyway, on rural America. Next item, yes, civilian-owned firearms. And I have to put the word sick after that because so far as they're concerned, you never really owned them anyway. If the leftists seize power in America, and you know what, folks? Given what's been happening in the Trump regime of late, maybe regardless, they now promise to take away your guns at gunpoint. And ironically, they call it a mandatory buyback program, but says Adams, that's just another way of saying gun confiscation, and it can't really be a buyback since you didn't buy your gun from Big Brother in the first place. Now here, folks, is where I'll interject again why I put the word sick, meaning, yeah, it really says that, but it's not technically correct after that word civilian-owned. And unlike things that they just plain ignore, like the actual written law in the Constitution, their use of words here is quite revealing. They really call it a gun buyback program because so far as they're concerned, you slaves, you peons, and this is the nature of the communist system, can't really own property anyway. That's only for the almighty state. So since the state owns everything, they really are just buying back what they let the slaves think they owned, at least for a while. And on that score, they're correct, because, of course, if you had to have Big Brother's permission to even possess it, it never really was yours after all at all, was it? And by this point, he notes, and I certainly agree, it's obvious why the tyrants in control of Big Brother don't want civilians to be able to say no to whatever it is they're planning next. They're obviously no longer trying to hide it, and the only way, and we all know this, that they can get away with it, is to force it down the unwilling throats of a completely disarmed and, of course, dumbed-down population. From Max Slavo, an SHTF plan, among many others, the United States government, yeah, that would be the Clinton, no, I'm sorry, Obama, well, no, this time it's the Trump regime, has demanded that both Apple and Gulag turn over information on gun owners who have a night vision scope on their rifles made by American Technologies Network Corp. and use an app called Obsidian 4. Now, part of the problem is this is a new high-tech scope that connects to the Internet. So right there, you know, Big Brother really is watching, and who better to turn to than Gulag and Apple when Big Brother wants to know what they're seeing? The Obsidian 4 app allows, quote, gun owners, and I have to say sick after that now, because those groups certainly don't believe there's any such thing, unless you're talking Big Brother itself, but it allows those people that at least thought they owned this piece of equipment to get a live stream, take video, and calibrate their gun scope from an Android or iPhone device. And right there's the rub, because neither of those devices are even remotely private, right? But the problem is, now Big Brother's demanding that its partners rat out people who thought they owned the phones, too. Forbes reported that the Department of Just Us has filed an application for this broadest ever net to be swept back on September the 5th of this year on Obsidian for users. So basically, Big Brother has now cast a wide net. We certainly don't have that Fourth Amendment stuff about particularly describing the person or places. We're just going to get them all in one fell swoop. King George III, remember, called them general warrants, and nail 10,000 or so gun owners simultaneously. Never before, noted Forbes, has a case been disclosed in which American investigators demanded personal data of users of a single app from Apple and Gulag. And never before has an order been made public where the feds have asked the Silicon Valley giants for information on so many thousands of people in one go. Unquote. Now, you did catch the qualifiers in there, right? Never before has it been announced, made public, allowed to be known what they're doing. Almost like there's a not-so-subtle message being sent here. We are watching, und we are coming for you, und there is no escape. I guess to quote Star Trek's Borg, resistance is futile. More and more, when it comes to the Bill of Rights, they're not even trying to hide what they're already doing. With all of that as background, and with, of course, the incredible level of coincidence surrounding the bum's rush to complete the disarming of a once-free people and the implementation of a totalitarian police state, this seems particularly apropos today. Comes from a piece written several days ago now by Dave Hodges of the Common Sense Show about what he's been referring to for quite a while, a Red Dawn invasion of the southern United States, facilitated, of course, with the willing cooperation of the communists, well, not just in California, but their puppet masters in China. And obviously there's no shortage of communists in the deep state swamp, particularly in the traitorous Communist Congress. Yeah, he says it looks like the Red Dawn invasion is basically on schedule because we're now witnessing the unveiling of domestic terrorism on a larger scale designed to weaken America, as if America already hadn't been pretty well internally weakened enough. Meanwhile, south of our border, the Russians have moved in heavy armor in large numbers and are awaiting a sufficiently weakened America before attacking. This report, he says, will expose the beginnings of a two-pronged action. MS-13, having been admitted en masse to the southern border, is on the loose, while the Russians are now moving tanks openly into Nicaragua after signing a naval agreement with Ortega. And here I pause to observe, hey, funny, isn't it, folks, how the media is all over Russia, 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 except when it comes to the real threats of actual invasion and war. Gee, maybe it has to do with the politics of those who have been aiding and abetting it for so long. Hodges then goes on to describe some of the background information that he's been putting out for quite a while from people like Marilyn Rupar, one of his sources, Alexandra Daly, and of course Paul Preston, the president of New California and one of the leaders there in a movement to separate those who still believe in a constitution, freedom, liberty, the First and Second Amendments, and so forth, from the totalitarian communists that have been running that state for a long time. And reminds us that he's been writing for quite a while about the fact that when the United States is sufficiently weakened, both Russia and China, under the UN flag, will attack the U.S. Both nations have a plethora of fifth column paramilitary forces already inside the country. Gee, that's kind of easy, isn't it, when you realize how open the borders have been and for how long? And he points out that others, including former Democrat Congressman Cynthia McKinney, Alan West, along with researcher Trevor Loudon, have all pointed out covert forces that have gained a foothold within the United States over the last 5 years or more. And even the most unaware, he says, are cognizant of the fact that the UN and prominent globalists like George Soros are involved. We also know that key Democrats through the CalExit affiliations are involved as well. And even disgraced FBI Director Hormeister James Comey stated back on July 4th of 2017 that ISIS now has a presence in all 50 states. Gee, thank you, Barry et al. And in 2014 through 15, says Hodges, I detailed, given insider information, about how this government under Obama was then facilitating the entry into this country of hitmen from the various cartels. We generally generally know as MS-13, but it's the recent bombing of the dive boat Conception off the L.A. coast on Labor Day, killing over 30 people, that really has the plot thickening. Says Hodges, early Labor Day morning, while Paul Preston was prepping for his popular local radio show, he received a call from a law enforcement listener in the Santa Barbara area and was surprised with what he then said were some stunning revelations, which he revealed to Hodges in a two-hour phone call on September the 9th, saying his source was impeccable and had never been wrong. The source revealed that the burning dive boat, the Conception, was blown up as a hit on several people on the boat. And that, as you may recall, has been at least suspected from the beginning. But any way you slice it, there's no doubt that a whole lot of the details of this story not only didn't make sense, but they stank to high heaven. Continues Hodges, one of the figures, not yet named, had Epstein connections, and that, of course, has been suspected from the beginning as well. However, the other two alleged targets of this terrorist attack are the ones that caught my attention, and Preston has since revealed, both to me and on his website, the following. Quote, the hit centered around MS-13, the international cartel gang that arose in Los Angeles in the late 1980s, who were taking out people involved in human trafficking and drug smuggling. And in later conversations, it was also revealed there was a money laundering element involving two of the victims. He goes on to say that by noon that same day, I was getting calls that news sources around the nation were stopping their coverage of the story. And we've certainly seen a lot of silence since then, haven't we? Except for those outlets in the local area. And isn't it interesting, suggests Hodges, that with the exception of a single crewman who some suspect may have been a participant in the crime, the crew of the Conception were the only other survivors. Last Friday, under the heading 30-plus dead and MS-13's callous disregard of collateral damage, Preston wrote the following on Facebook. Folks in positions of authority and power are avoiding an ugly truth as if they dare not touch it, like the third rail in a subway. But I've had folks contact me, he says, wanting the truth to come out. A few days ago, a couple of criminals were wiped out, and over 30 innocent victims were sent to their graves before their times. The innocent were simply in the wrong place at the wrong time, and those given charge of the safety and security of those aboard their vessel deserted their responsibilities and aided in the deaths of those innocents. Even a casual observer might ask, how was it the crew managed to survive the inferno while their passengers did not? He follows that up by writing that MS-13 has recently employed a strategist in their quest to effectively wipe out their enemies and any authorities that get in their way. They've never been shy about direct action, nor have they been bothered by collateral damage. They find themselves in every state with a mandate to profit from the misery of others, either via the sale of illegal substances, stolen goods, kidnapping, murder for hire, or paying for political influence. These are, of course, not choir boys, and they've shown their viciousness on a national scale without caring that they will be exposed as the deliberate beneficiaries of the recent carnage. Well, you know, folks, they're not shy about their identity. They tattoo it, including the number of their murders, all over themselves in plain sight. But, continues Preston, when police freely share information that at least for the time being is hidden from public view, you know that some consciences are bothered, and there's a fear that justice will not be administered to the guilty. And all I can add to that is, gee, do you think? So he says, basically, this is a time for all of us to be concerned. Dave Hodges continues that what he learned next was stunning. One of the murdered couples had deep connections to a casino interest in southern Arizona, and the casino in its southern Native American land extended into Mexico, which gave the cartel interest and corrupt government forces direct access to the American-based casino, which was allegedly the site of much money laundering. And just like the Vegas mobs in the 60s and 70s, the mob tended to deal harshly with anyone who would skim money. So this cartel hit, via their MS-13 assassins, which killed 30 innocent victims, demonstrates the viciousness of the cartels and their MS-13 subordinates. However, that doesn't end the story. Re-enter Marilyn Rupar and Alexandra Daly, and their research, writes Hodges, along with my own, clearly demonstrates that the cartels are beholden to communist Chinese interests. And he's documented this, he says, many times, both in his writings and on his radio shows. I've had confirmation by a multitude of insiders, ranging from the DEA to Border Patrol to the FBI. Now, I even mentioned earlier this week a partial list of California politicians in bed with the communist Chinese. No wonder it's a partial list, folks. Probably hard in an hour show to get the entire one out there. But I suspect regular listeners could rattle off half a dozen or so without pausing for breath. But he says these groups, all of them, are now being unleashed. I had a DHS agent recently tell me that the false flag shootings are now happening every other week. And he says they expect them to increase with regularity and intensity, resulting in even greater loss of life. And the blowing up of the ship meets the criteria, even though it doesn't further the gun control narrative. Oh, and a quick aside here, folks. If history is any guide, and it is, now that Congress is back from their recess, it does convincingly sound a lot like what kindergarten kids do. And they're going to pull out all of their guns to try to take yours via red flag confiscation and a final wooden stake in the heart of the concept, even, of private property. Well, I think it's reasonable to expect Americans are going to need another demonstration, or several, of what human sacrifice in gun-free killing zones looks like on the altar of political correctness. And now that Walmart, Kroger, and others are disarming those stupid enough to continue shopping there in spite of the risks, there are a lot more soft targets, as the deep state likes to refer to them, out there now than there even were before. So, a word to the wise, and back to Paul Preston, who Hodges said told him that a Chinese operative operating in Stockton, California, has been brought in to coordinate these actions. Furthermore, under this person's direction, he's learned that an incendiary device was used to blow up the ship. No surprise there. He's also learned that the media lied about the ship being 3 miles out to sea. If you've seen the photographs, that was obviously a falsehood. It was 20 yards off the coast of one of the Channel Islands. One of the crewmen's missing. The operating hypothesis being that he was part of the plot, set off the device, then swam to shore and disappeared, which makes it a classic MS-13 hit. But the ramifications of the case shouldn't get lost in the details. A, the waste stream media is now complicit in covering up the event. Sometimes what the media says is not what's important, it's what they don't say. In other words, as Sherlock Holmes referred to it, the dog that did not bark. Remember how after shootings, there's always a media frenzy to interview family members, survivors, friends of the victims, and basically push the narrative. And media coverage literally drags on for days until the public gets sick and tired of it. This one, of course, didn't fit the narrative, and the opposite happened. There was a distinct lack of coverage, and especially the human elements that draw viewers were all but ignored. In other words, it seems like the fix was in because this one was just too hot for the MSM to handle. And further, he says, given the importation of groups like ISIS, the cartels, and MS-13, it was only a matter of time until America was brought to her knees by a coordinated attack from these groups and, of course, their handlers. He's also stated he believes that when America is sufficiently weakened, the Russians and Chinese will invade. And guess what, folks? If you see the coordinated push to disarm Americans and foment that second civil war they've been working so hard on, maybe it does look like we're getting pretty close. Add in the food price carnage come the fall harvest, or lack thereof, and the impending economic meltdown, already in progress, and you can see why the criminal Congress is really in an all-fired stinking hurry to get Americans disarmed before they realize what's already been done to them. Suggests Hodges, we're getting to the period of time where America is in the early stages of being carved up like a proverbial Thanksgiving turkey. And I guess you can ask the Bundy Ranch folks what that feels like. Because the fifth column of domestic terrorists are already inside and distributed within the United States. All of this is being accompanied by very serious and new military activity south of the border, which certainly begins to look like it's all a coordinated plan. When it comes to the videos, increasingly obvious on the web, about Russian tanks rolling in Managua, Hodges concludes the following. Why would the Russians be parading them down there? Wouldn't it be cheaper just to send a delegation? It could be, but that's not the objective. The clear objective is to hide these tanks in plain sight. And he suggests they're only there for one purpose, and it's not to participate in parades. I want to wrap all of this discussion up with one brief tweet from yet another one of the outright communists who not only admits openly, yeah, we've been lying about it for years, but we really do intend to steal your guns. This guy wants to be the next dictator. I'm talking about the Irish liar pretending to be Hispanic, Robert Francis O'Rourke, a.k.a. Beto, who tweeted the following, with video footage to back it up to boot. Quote, I was asked how I'd address people's fears that we will take away their assault rifles. I want to be clear. That's exactly what we're going to do. Americans who own, sick, AR-15s and AK-47s, will have to sell their assault weapons, all of them, unquote, or else, folks. What do you think he's going to do if they don't? Well, the answer is obvious. We intend to kill you, whether you give them up voluntarily or we take them over your dead bodies. Let's not kid ourselves. This has already gotten way beyond serious, and the Constitution for these traitors has been a dead letter ever since before they first put their hand on a Bible and lied through their damnable teeth. You know what, folks? You could almost argue that MS-13, with their teardrop tattoos, is more honest about their intentions for you. So when Hodges suggests that enemies like, but not limited to, China and Russia intend to invade when America is weakened, it's increasingly obvious, at the rate things are going, that won't take much longer. So yeah, get ready while you still can.